Oh, hey there, listeners and juicers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you have fallen in love with the Draw Your Dice podcast and want to help put some new fruit on the table, but don't feel comfortable making a monthly commitment, well, you can support the show via the Acast supporter feature. No gift too large, nor too small. Just click on the link in the show description and know that I am sending you the strongest hug when you do so.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
My name is Jeremy Gage, and welcome to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is an educational show involving all things tabletop role-playing industry. Listen alongside me as we hear from creators, entrepreneurs, and supporters about their personal best practices, principles, and philosophies. I encourage anyone from the budding game designer to a seasoned publisher and everyone in between to sit down with us and enjoy today's episode. Thank you for coming to the Draw Your Dice podcast. This is Jeremy Gage, as you're in the intro, but as always, the show is never about me. It is who I have brought to you today, and I have brought another fellow podcaster, a game designer, a just-found-out producer of documentaries. I would love to welcome to the show, Eco.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on here, Eco. As always, at the top of the show, would you just give a brief introduction of who you are, what you do, any links and things? I would love people to get to know who you are and also give you money as soon as possible.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Eco. I run the Lost Bay podcast, which is a podcast on and with indie RPG creators and designers and artists. It's an interview podcast about the creative processes of RPG makers, basically. And I also make RPG zines. And you can find all my stuff at thelastbaystudio.com, which is like kind of the umbrella website where I put everything I'm doing. And that's about it.
Perfect. Additionally, as an icebreaker for all the fans, would you just give sort of a lineage of your RPG exposure? Maybe it was like, what was the first RPG you played? And then what was the first sort of idea that got you into game design as well?
Yeah, sure. So I started playing quite young, like when I was 14 or 15, basically D&D. I played like for 10 years, probably with the same group of friends. And then we moved on to college or to work, different cities, different countries. And I stopped playing for a long time until maybe 4 or 5 years ago when I started playing again in Paris, France. And basically, I've met a bunch of really nice and kind folks, and we've been playing mostly indie stuff, like homebrew systems and games. And then something happened with the pandemic and the lockdown, you know. I started spending more time on the internet, and I could talk more about that. This is when the podcast started, actually. But it's the moment in which I discovered the OSR, post-OSR indie scene, whatever we want to call it. And yeah, you know, staying home, working home, and spending lots of hours on the computers, that led me to discovering new RPG territories. And so, yeah, it's kind of a new adventure for me, like like exploring and taking part to the in the community. It's less than a year, probably.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you started the podcast at the kind of top of the pandemic, or like after a little while into the middle of it?
At one of the spikes of the pandemic, at least here in continental Europe. So basically, in my day job, I'm an indie documentary producer, and the pandemic hit our industry pretty hard as the festival circuit and the theaters were closed. And so, like, work became really slow somehow. And my roommate, which is also my business partner, just was seeing me spending evenings watching Critical Role, you know, videos and talking to them about Critical Role, and they don't play RPG at all. And after a while, they told me, hey, listen, buddy, you've got time on your hands. You seem to really enjoy this RPG thing. Why don't you try doing something about it? I mean, we have not much to do. So I kind of responded, you know, to that push. And I'm not sure how then it started. I've read Cairn, the book by Yohai Gal. I had invited me to his Discord server, NSR. It was very kind, and I was really struck by Cairn. And I mean, I just said, let's try it. I did the first interview like that without really knowing how many episodes I would do, or even if I would do more than one episode. But I had good feedback on the show. And then from there, it started growing. And honestly, it has been a huge opportunity. I'm really grateful to meet like awesome creators and create. And there's a lot of awesome people in the RPG community, and that has been really, yeah, a huge opportunity to meet people and understand how they think, how they feel, how they work, and yeah, that's about it.
I think that some of the listeners of this show will find that we have very similar timelines and exposures to starting our podcast, and that, yeah, you know, for me, I started this podcast back in September of 2020, and I told myself I would do 52 episodes. I would get 52 guests on the show and do like a year's worth of podcasting and see how that goes. And I wanted to learn from a bunch of people. I wanted to learn more about game design, game theory, the business of it. And like, just like you said, I've met, you included, a ton of amazing individuals who are creative and caring and want what's right for the RPG industry as a collective, which has all been really amazing. It's really awesome to hear that there are obviously other communities out there that are doing very similar things. So I'm happy that you also started podcasting and showing the world that there are cool people out there.
Yeah.
You're doing a great service.
Thank you.
I can't say enough nice things. Well, I do want to pick your brain about the producer stuff as well later, because I think that might be useful to those who are in like the field of actual plays, which I think could be cool. But I want to talk about you a little bit more and your first game that we're kind of set up here to talk about, or your first supplemental piece, Sky Realm. So what was the idea for Sky Realms? How did that get started for you?
Okay. So actually, it's the second zine I released. A few months of I've like put out in the wild, and I've kickstarted in August another zine, which is Broken Luck, which is a Troika zine. But somehow I feel that like, okay, now I'm going to do fulfillment and distribute it throughout a few stores. And somehow I feel like the life of Broken Luck has ended for me, all the like the path. And I started working on Sky Realms like a couple of months ago. Basically, how this started was I was chatting with Leo from LFOSR. I don't know if you're familiar with LFOSR or...
I am not.
You are not? Okay. So LFOSR is, I'm not sure how I should call it, a small press or studio, which produces limited handcrafted editions of zines, of RPG zines. And they do absolutely beautiful stuff. And is going to print some cards, which are stretch goals and goodies for the Broken Luck campaign, Kickstarter campaign I ran in August. And so I was chatting with Leo and about the ideas, basically. I was not really brainstorming. I was basically asking a lot of questions about papers and what can be done. And he was explaining me the shortage of paper right now because of like the disruption in the supply chain, etc. And I just, I wanted to do a bestiary, basically like a card-based bestiary. And I started working on that. And I don't know, I support Evelyn Moreau on Patreon. And I don't know what happened. I started browsing. Probably I received like an email notification with some new drawings she had put on her Patreon. So I started browsing her drawings. And of course, I knew Evelyn's work, but I thought bestiary plus Evelyn's drawings, that could be really cool. And I've shown a drawing to Leo, asking him like, what he was thinking about it, but like printing wise, how we could print it in an interesting way, etc. And the thing he said was, well, I would use it to do some coloring, you know, as a coloring figure. And the Sky Realms, this zine I'm working on is like, I call it a weird fan game neutral bestiary and coloring book. So I started trying that, coloring Evelyn's drawings. And that was like, I found solace in that. That was an amazing experience. And so I designed the book in a way that it's both going to be, there's a bestiary and little implied setting. And there are also some complementary tables that helps like outlining the setting. But also I've picked the drawings and I've designed the book in a way that it can be a nice coloring book, and it's going to be printed on cool and nice paper so that you can color it with whatever you want, pencils, crayons, or even markers or paint. And so that's the story. That's the spark that launched Sky Realms, basically.
And you have such cool, like, intricately textured drawings here as well, like in terms of all the creatures. I love that you can sort of insert the islands into really whatever other setting you're using, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the things I've been exploring a lot lately as I think about different things I want to create, I'm really into this idea of, I was listening to the RPG Panelcast podcast, and they had an episode about micro settings and talking about how a lot of the old trad games with their big sweeping continents of content don't really have that much in terms of content, and those people feel like when they are operating games on those settings, it feels like it's borrowed land in a way. Like if I make up a big shrine temple of some sort in this desert, I kind of have to like build the temple around the desert. So they were talking about like how Duskfall and Blades in the Dark is an example of a micro setting. It's a single city that you can kind of like plant anywhere in another. And I also love that you created something that's system agnostic. You just really need a D6, which most people should have based on other board games, that they could use any of these prompting tables to insert these beasts or places or even like the implied setting bits into their game, which is really, really cool. I'm just very fascinated by a project like this, and I think it's smart. And the fact that it's what was the term? Someone called it like destructive games or something like that, but like where you mark up or tear up your RPG supplement, right? So I love that you could like customize your book and have maybe like the same creature, but different cultures. If you had two people like come into contact with Sky Realm, it's very cool.
Yeah, I love micro settings. I mean, I think they're really cool because they leave a lot of agency to people who play, you know, like to the game masters or the players. And yeah, they're more fun basically. And yeah, in Sky Realms, I wanted things to be very open. You know, there a lot I've put a lot of work into like suggesting things and leaving things also unexplained. And there's this Cyclops thing, this theme of these Cyclops who have died, which is there and nobody knows why and what it is really. And so, yeah, I tried, yeah, to leave it open so that people could like branch their own worlds, creations, campaigns, whatever games into it, you know, so that it was like, yeah, not rigid structure, but rather like something like malleable. Is that an English word? I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah. It feels very, I think micro settings are kind of like adventure seeds in of themselves. And it's absolutely so fascinating that like you could plant a micro setting into your larger setting. And from there, as it grows, as any players become like more and more invested in that particular micro setting, that it gets roots, it gets branches, it starts to take on a completely different form as the game progresses, if that's something that the players are interested in. So I think it's really I think just the concept of micro settings and system agnostic or setting agnostic pieces of content are, I think, more powerful than they get credit for, which is really interesting to me.
And hey, listen, if people like it, I'd love to write more, you know, about this setting too. And the fun fact about it is that, so for listeners, these Sky Realms are tiny floating islands between like the mortal world and the world of the gods. And actually, they're inspired from real islands. I've been visiting this summer for work, small islands in the, not so far from the Italian shore. I've been traveling for work and I knew some of them already, but yeah, so I kind of tried to translate them. It might sound odd because it's really a weird setting, but I tried to translate the things I saw in those islands to into RPG stuff. So I can write more about that because I love those places. So
also Sky Realms coloring contest win.
Oh yeah. That's a great idea.
What I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for the idea. That's a great idea. Yeah.
Hey, okay. You can have that for free. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's launch that. That's a great idea. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see, cause I'm looking at the cone beings. I'm looking at the Lostronaut, and it's just so easy. I could see all the different variants. I could see someone like coloring in a background for that picture. Like,
yeah, I wonder
coloring contests could be cool.
Yeah, I wonder if people would do background drawings, you know, for the the figures. Yeah, the Lostronaut is a really fun drawing to color. Honestly,
honestly.
Amazing. Yeah, because it has so much detail and it's easy. Mm-hmm. The shape is really easy to, I mean, I'm really bad at drawing or crafts or coloring, but yeah, I really enjoyed coloring these Evelyn Moreau's figures. She's really an incredible artist with a unique sensitivity. And I'm so happy and grateful that she accepted basically that I used her drawings for this project. And yeah, so really happy about that.
Yeah, it's a lot. This is the only shortcoming of a podcast being an audio medium is that I can't share what I'm seeing with the fans or listeners. But
yeah, people will have to buy it, you know.
Exactly. Go buy the game. But yes, all the art pieces, all the figure pieces are so cool because they have such an asymmetrical / organic style.
Yeah.
Like, there's no sort of like geometry about them. And I think that just, I've not read the book, but it feels very much like the kind of style of like, what's it called? Where the Wild Things Are, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of like Ghibli energy in here as well.
I agree. That made me think about Where the Wild Things Are. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, her drawings. I mean, some of her drawings. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's great. It's super cool. Yeah, Sky Realms is cool, really evocative. Everyone, go and get it. Yeah. There's no reason not to. You know what I'm saying? There's a person carrying there's a religious, which is carrying like a giant's foot.
Yeah.
Just carrying it around.
Yeah,
just a little bug man. Bug man carrying a foot.
There's a lot of strange and nice and surprising creatures, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sort of the next bit here, sort of break up the game speak a little bit and talk a little bit more about like the off mic. We were talking about business a tiny bit, or like the topic of business. And I'd love to kind of pick your brain about what it takes to be a producer of documentaries. Cause A, that's part of who you are as a person currently. And B, I myself am trying to get into production for actual plays. So I'd love to get a tiny bit of insight, whatever you're willing to provide, for how that works. And if you have like any advice for people who also want to help do production work in our RPG space.
Okay, so about like the non-RPG part of it. So yeah. I work in continental Europe, and I know that's like the ecosystem, and also the financial part of the ecosystem of a documentary production. And I'm talking about like indie documentary production, meaning films made for theatrical release in small cinemas or in the festival circuit, is really different from what happens in the United States or in other part of the world.
Interesting.
Meaning that it relies extremely on public funding. There are like strong like state institution that support like globally cinema in continental Europe, especially in France, and a production documentary relies mainly on that. So, I mean, I've been working in that field for like 15 years, so I know how it works there, but I'm not sure that, you know, it's very different. Sometimes I think like France is, so yeah, it's a very strange system. Basically, it was actually it was created by a communist, who was the head of the Ministère de la Culture in the 50s. So it's very different system where like in French cinema, public funding represents between 50% and 60% of the funding. So
interesting.
Yeah. And I could talk hours about that. But that implies a lot of things in the way you work, basically. You get to get through a lot of commissions who are going to decide if they fund you or not, basically. Sounds a little bit like, I don't know, socialist country in the 70s or something like that. But anyways, what I would say is that was a bit long, but what I would say is that today, after almost 2 years into the pandemic, our industry has been totally disrupted because the theaters they remained closed for so long. And even now in almost all the countries, the cinema theaters have reopened at some capacity, but the market is totally, disrupted, unbalanced. It's transforming extremely quickly and nobody knows what's going to happen. So I'll say that my advice would be embrace change because things are going to change so quickly, and try to educate yourself to how the market and like the landscape is evolving, and embrace change, because I think that what we've experienced in this industry is that some transformations that were somehow expected to happen in like 10 or 15 years happened in 6 months, basically.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and some structural transformations of the market. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just had a, like huge and great like business slash planning meeting with my business partner today. And it was all about, let's embrace change. That's for like the non-RPG part of it. And yeah, you talked about actual plays.
Yeah. So what does like a day in the life of a producer look like?
Oh, yeah. A lot of spreadsheets, basically. A lot of spreadsheets. No, yeah.
Is it about like finding funding for things? Is it about like assembling the budget? Is it more than that?
I think it's like, I mean, when you're not working with a network or in a studio, I think it's a little bit like any creative like job, you do a bit or a lot of everything, you know, from looking for funding, supervising technical aspects, finding solutions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically what I would say, yeah, I'm not sure. Sorry, I'm a bit lost in the conversation. I don't remember.
No, you're okay. You're super okay. So maybe this will help. I am currently working on a production of an actual play.
Yeah, that's where we have good, great.
Thank you.
Great news.
Thank you. It's my first one. And, you know, part of the reason I made this podcast is so I could selfishly learn from others, because I don't want to pay for any sort of schooling or online courses.
Great strategy.
But thank you. And everyone else gets the benefit as well.
Sure.
What I'm kind of asking, you talk about like you're looking for solutions for problems and things like that. Are you kind of like the, I don't want to say mastermind, that's not quite the correct space I want to ask the question in, but are you sort of responsible for the structure of how a production is put together? And what I more specifically mean by that is, are you responsible for like the timeline? Are you responsible for?
Oh no, the quick answer is no, I'm not.
Okay.
Basically,
okay, cool.
So my job is to provide the means to the author, director, and probably, I don't know, that's very French. The real captain of the ship is the director. Uh-huh. They are the author and the subject of the film is theirs, and they sort of decide how they want to work. And so the job of the producer is to like facilitate or create the structure that will provide the necessary means, technical or otherwise, to make the job of the director possible and easier. So it's kind of dialogue. And of course, the producer is in charge and responsible of the financial aspect. So you might say that some things can be done, and then you have to find technical solutions in dialogue with the director to bring them what they need to build the film and the story. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, it is.
So you're kind of helping to maybe bring the director's vision to a tangible reality by within the means of what specifically in the continental Europe, what is provided to you based on sort of crowdfunding methods. Is this almost correct?
Based on crowdfunding, you said? Or?
Yeah, you said a lot of there's like government funding for the arts in continents. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So yeah, but it's not crowdfunding. It's not crowdfunding. It's really like you have to write like screenplays, 60 pages screenplays. You assist the director in that, and then there's like 20 pages budgets that go together with the screenplay. It's very detailed. And yeah, the applications are extremely complex and detailed. And I mean, and I don't do that alone. I know I have like people who help me and who are like maybe specialized in some aspects, for example, like the financial part of it, or, and then you go look for the funding like that. So, but again, I think like, this is how I've been working for years, but I think like it's almost over now because I mean, there's been the pandemic and there's been like the platforms like Netflix, Amazon Prime, Apple TV, et cetera, taking a huge chunk of the market during the pandemic. So yeah, the market is shifting really. So speaking, I've got a question for you. Are you going to run the actual plays as well, or are you going to produce actual plays with other, you know, GMs or players? So what's your plan?
So what I essentially want to be is like a producer slash showrunner in a way. So I want to, so for this next project, the process that I've currently concocted is that I will work with the GM, who I guess in this case, just to use some applied knowledge now, is technically the director of the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great analogy.
Thank you. And basically, we're going to sit down after our meeting today, after we do a cast meet and greet of like, hey, what are you looking to do with the episode, like what sort of narrative bullet points are you going to hit, et cetera, et cetera. And then what I was going to do after that is sort of think about, okay, so like what can we do with different graphics, right? What sort of like different graphics could we use for, because this is pre-produced, this isn't going to be a live stream. So what kind of like graphics can we use for the recording? I was also going to like listen in on the sessions and make timestamp notes for the GM's vision slash my vision to share with the video production team to be like, it'd be cool if like we could have a zoom in on these two characters because they're engaged in a long dialogue here. Just kind of like notes like that. If there's like audio stuff we can do, like, you know, this character is a dragon, so it'd be cool if we can get like some sort of echo effect on their voice or something while they're speaking that dialogue or when that character comes up. Cool. So I was going to engage in like things like that to sort of manage, bring communication to all the teams and to the cast and manage the scheduling and execution of the production. And then all the post-production is out of my hands.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. That's a cool project.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, yeah, you know, when you mentioned right before we started that you were a producer of documentaries, I really wanted to see how things worked on your end and what sort of, and it's interesting because I didn't really consider that the producer is the one that sort of handles all the financial bits with all the spreadsheets. But I think that's important because we don't really have like a person coordinating financials quite yet in our, we do have a confirmed budget, but we just don't know the execution of like how we're trading that money around. So
it's cool. It's cool to have,
I guess I will also take on that responsibility.
You know? Oh yeah. Anyways, it's cool to have somebody who is in charge of that aspect and who can tell, you know, who can ring some alarms sometimes when spending is not well balanced or whatever. So,
I am definitely that person, even when I'm not a producer.
Anyways, you know, like producing creative documentaries is a very long process. Each film takes between 4 and 6 years to be produced.
And, whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah. And what I really love about this, you know, RPG thing is, and the podcast and the zines, it's that it's a much different pace, you know. And of course, so that's really something that gives me a lot of pleasure, and yeah, you know, it's,
that's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. Thank you for being so vulnerable on the show. I really appreciate it. Let's talk about this big Lost Bay project that you sort of hinted at off mic. What is it? What's going on?
Okay. So yeah, I'm working on this game, The Lost Bay. And basically I named the podcast after the game because I had no idea, no better idea, you know, for the show. So I said, okay, I'm going to call it the Lost Bay Podcast. So whatever. So basically I've been running for, I don't know, a couple of years, a lot of games in the Lost Bay setting, which is a homemade setting set in the early 90s during the summer in fictional South, which is very much inspired from the places where I grew up. And to be precise, this is the island of Corsica, which is a Mediterranean island, a French Mediterranean island. But I know that playing it, some people like read it or felt that it was somewhere else, like maybe somewhere that had a meaning for them. Somebody told me, it feels like Southern California or whatever. I mean, the starting point was like the place where I grew up. So, but it became kind of abstract. So basically I've run this setting for, I don't know, 50, 60 games, both with a consistent group of players. And I have run a huge campaign. And before the pandemic, I used to go in a very cool public library in Paris, France, where once a month there's an RPG night. And it's an amazing place because it's a very welcoming and safe place. The librarians do an amazing work organizing these sessions. And so every once a month, there's like 50, 60, 70 people coming from like really different backgrounds, different ages, different like social or ethnic realities. And like everybody plays together in very safe environment. And so there had the opportunity to play a lot of The Lost Bay with people I didn't know. So in the last 2 years, I've been writing a lot and I was using pre-existing systems. At first I played using the Tales from the Loop system, which is cool. Yeah, because the characters, like you can play originally they were teenagers. So in the new version of the game, they're going to be like teenagers or young adults, but the Tales from the Loop is an RPG system where all the characters are kids. They're teenagers, you know? So I've tweaked it a little bit I've used it. And once I started like, you know, reading, listening and watching stuff about the OSR and playing more in OSR or post-OSR-ish style, I bit by bit transformed The Lost Bay. So it kind of evolved a lot from where it started from. It has a different game engine now. It's more simple, more flexible. There's more randomish stuff and tables, but also the setting has evolved. It's much more, a little bit like for Skyrim's, open to interpretation. There's something which is suggested, which is a 90s suburban setting somewhere in the South, but it could be, I don't know, Europe, the US, South America, Southeast Asia. It doesn't matter. You make it your own. And there's this weird place where weird stuff happens and where during a never-ending summer, and the only ones who notice that the summer is not ending are the kids, the teenagers. Adults don't get it, don't see what's happening. So, and there's like mystery and gods, strange gods who do their stuff.
The classics.
Yeah, the classics. But they're kind of losers, those gods. They're kind of, they're not, they're powerful, but there are some losers, gods or saints. Yeah, the classics. So I've been writing a lot about it. And next year in February, I'm going to do a Kickstarter during ZineQuest. But as I told you, I want the the game to be open, you know. So I've invited writers to contribute to some parts of the game, and I'm not sure like who if I can tell who is going to contribute now, because I'm talking with the people, and probably
we're in October as of recording this, so we're still 5 months out from Zine Quest. Yeah. So but, you're super okay. You don't have to get into it those if you don't want to.
But because I just want to be super 100% sure. But there's like great people who are going to contribute with texts to the zine. Each one writing a tiny bit or a specific part, maybe. Somebody's going to write the scary mofos, which are really bad NPCs, and somebody else did the bestiary, somebody apart on the gods and on the tarot cards, which are a divination system. And similarly, there will be like different artists contributing. And because what I like is that I like the zine somehow to look like a journal, you know, like a diary. Mm-hmm. Where you cut and paste and write stuff, and maybe one page looks like a textbook and one other page like an article and one other page is written by hand. And so I like, to feel it a bit chaotic, messy, like the journal of a teenager. And so, I have already like a list of great artists contributing to it. And what I want is like, you know, it's hard to speak about images like that. Yeah. It's, you know,
the audio medium that is podcast.
Yeah. What do you mean? Yeah. It's like how to call that? There won't be like, you know, the small drawing, like in the bottom right end of the page. Mm-hmm. When there's going to be art, it's going to be like an art explosion, like a double page, a full page. And I want to give a lot of space, a lot of room to the artists who are going to contribute to the zine. And so right now I'm putting a lot of work in like building the team who's going to work on the project. Iam Yusen, you might know, is going to do some development editing. He helped me with the zine Broken Luck, and that was awesome. It was really awesome. It really, he's an extraordinary folk. And so he's going to be the development editor for the zine. And Jared from Exalted Funeral is going to do editing. And
very cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And as I told you, there's going to be a lot of names added up to this list, basically. So, and
people are just going to have to follow it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the pre-launch page is going to be live at the beginning of December. It should. I mean, it's a bit early now, but it should be live at the beginning of December. And it's the big project for me, the big RPG project. Yeah.
I love it. I love collaboration projects like that too, where there's so much going on in the book that you can really start to like build a collective set of authors to be a part of it. And I think it's, as I work on my own giant game, I think it's just really, really cool to bring other hands into the mix and create something that is so much more powerful than what you could have created by yourself. Right.
And you know, I wasn't expecting that, because I mean, it started as a very personal project. I even wrote some like fiction in French, like in that setting, etc. But I thought, okay, just let it go, some parts of it, you know, give them to other people and see how how they reinterpret or what they bring with their own story, their own sensitivity. I'm not going to like micromanage. Like I'm just going to give like some very broad prompts just to be sure that everything is consistent. But I just want to welcome like others people, a sensitivity into that setting. And yeah, I think that's kind of new for me. I'm kind of a control freak somehow on the work side of things, at least. So yeah, I decided to loosen up and to.
It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be such a great project.
I hope it's going to be beautiful.
I'm a 90s baby, so it's very really? Fascinating to me. Yeah, I was born 1990.
Wow. Okay.
I was born in Northern California, and I lived in Central California for a long time. So I myself am now interested in when this Lost Bay setting comes out. I would love to give it a read for sure.
Sure.
Well, I think, are there any other topics you want to get into today, Eco?
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm, yeah, no. I mean, I think we've covered like almost everything I do. So even the 9-to-5 part, job part. So, I mean, that's quite exhaustive. So, yeah.
Well, amazing. Well, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Would you just give a brief outro once again of who you are, links where people can get in touch with you and reach out to you and learn more about the Lost Bay Project? All these links that Eco is about to provide will be down below in the show notes for your access listeners.
Sure. So thanks again, first of all, for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. And so I'm Eco. I run the Lost Bay podcast, which is a podcast with and about RPG, indie RPG creators and artists. And right now there's when you release this episode, there will be the second season of the podcast running. It's going to be weekly, and you can reach out on Twitter. I'm mostly on Twitter, and my handle is The Lost Bay, or get on my website, which is thelostbaystudio.com. And also, or find The Lost Bay podcast on the major podcast providers like Apple Podcasts or Anchor, Spotify, and that's it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. It's an absolute pleasure to learn from Eco. I hope you learned a lot of stuff from Eco, because I know I certainly did. And we will see you, listen to you. You'll hear us. There it is. You'll hear us next time on the audio medium. Have a great day. Say bye to the people, Eco.
Yeah, goodbye. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, listeners. Thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and hang out with Eco and I. We really appreciate it. You can find links and resources down below in the show notes for getting in touch with Eco and other content with similar topics. Support Jeremy and the DYD podcast by reviewing the show or joining the community Discord server. Thanks again for listening, and remember that design is a marathon, so enjoy the journey and have a great day.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites. putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.